you're in the 06010.
That's right. Welcome in to another edition of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast during the offseason. Field Yates, Matthew Berry, Stefania Bell. It's Tuesday, February 16th. Good to be with you again during the offseason. And a reminder that the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. We'll be with you throughout the offseason. For those that may have missed last week's show or you simply downloaded but did not actually listen to the episode, first of all, good on you. Second of all, we'll be with you every Tuesday throughout the offseason going through whatever is newsworthy. But before we get to a little bit of news that we'll stretch it to make it fantasy relevant, good morning, Matthew Berry. What's happening, my friend?
I think what's happening here is, you know, we're doing this video audio only. But I think what's happening here is that mustache, that sweet, sweet stash you've got growing. I mean, this is breaking news, Stefania, like, because we're looking at each other on video, even though it's only audio only. And Field Yates can actually grow facial hair. This is a shocking development of the offseason.
You have not been paying attention. Because I watch Field Yates on TV, because unlike you, Field Yates is on TV.
Correct.
When it's in the football offseason. And I noticed the other day, I was like, did I see a goatee, a bit of a goatee on television? I was impressed.
Yeah. So I will quickly reveal that, you know, the offseason does tend to lead to some changes for those of us in our personal life. A, a lot more time spent at home, and B, a lot less time trying to be TV ready. So I gave it a whirl to see what would happen. And normally when a husband shaves his face into a mustache or goes with something completely unique, his partner, there usually tends to be some feedback, and a lot of it can be negative, right? Chapin, meanwhile, is like, I love the mustache. She's like, all I want is the mustache. So
wow,
I think it's going to be retired in the next couple of days here, but it's having a good run while we have it. So
all right. Well, listen, I mean, honestly, you're broadcasting to an audience of one, honestly. Happy wife, happy life.
So, that's right.
The truth is that if Chapin's on board, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks.
Correct. That's exactly right. So we'll see whether she makes a decision to keep it later or whether I have the right to shave it and say goodbye and send it into retirement. But we'll see. That'll be on next week's episode to cover.
I think it's
next
Twitterful.
I think the fantasy folks should do a Twitter poll. Well, Jackson can go ahead and do that if he feels so inclined. Instead, let's get to the fantasy stuff that people care about. And again, first, we're going to start with the story that I think does not have any fantasy relevance. We'll talk about it, though, because it's football news, and we could find a way to make it fantasy relevant. J.J. Watt was released by the Texans. This took place on Friday. He broke the news himself on Twitter with a very well-thought-out and said and stated statement to the Houston Texans fans and faithful. He is immediately eligible to sign with a new team. He is what is called a streak-free agent, so he does not need to wait until the start of the new league year. So J.J. Watt, let's start here, Matthew. We can take a minute and just run through what J.J. Watt meant to the Houston Texans, how much of an icon he was for that franchise. In fact, you know, the best player to ever put on a Houston Texans uniform.
And not only in terms of what he did on the field, which obviously is impressive and speaks for itself, you know, multiple Pro Bowls, Defensive Player of the Year, et cetera, you know, an icon, but also what he meant to that community. And the kind of work that J.J. Watt has done helping rebuild that city through their various tragedies as well. Like, just an icon, not only of the team from his NFL point of view, but an icon of the community in terms of what he's meant to Houston. And so I thought this was such an incredibly dumb move by the Texans in a series of incredibly dumb moves. I understand saying, like, hey, we get it. You no longer want to be here. We want to honor you because of what you've meant. But work with him, say, okay, where do you want to go? Let's understanding that it's going to hurt our leverage somewhat, but like try to get something for him because he was under contract. Like, you're the Texans and you're draft pick deficient. Trade him for something. Again, you can work with the player and his agent to say, like, where do you want to land? You don't think so, Field?
He's 32. He was due $17.5 million. If you had to rank JJ Watt on the best defensive lineman in the NFL right now, where is he? Best defensive lineman.
You don't think he's top 10?
You think he's top 10?
Yeah.
At this stage of his career, you think J.J. Watt's one of the 10 best defensive linemen in the NFL?
When healthy. I mean, that's the big question, of course, but yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, we have a very different, I love JJ Watt. He's an unbelievable player. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer whenever he decides to hang it up, but I don't think he's close to a top 10 defensive lineman right now. And a team is going to pay a draft pick plus $17.5 million for a player that I don't think is close to a top 10 defensive lineman. I think a trade could have been much more modest than people are assuming it would have been for the Texans. And moreover, well, you're right. You could have worked with JJ and his agent to find a team that might have been palatable for JJ. The teams that JJ probably really wants to play for, if he wants to go somewhere where he wants to maximize his chances of winning, like a Green Bay or a Kansas City or a Pittsburgh, they have no shot at acquiring JJ Watt for $17.5 million. I thought this was an inevitability. Like, it stinks. And I thought it was a bummer that on Friday we were having to discuss so many other elements of the Texans, but I wasn't surprised at all that they wound up cutting him. I don't think they really had any other choice.
But especially, by the way, like, I think you put him on one of those kind of lines, you put him on a line like the Steelers, like, you know, like the Packers, I think he becomes, and he's not getting double teamed, I think he becomes a lot more effective again if he's healthy. And I sort of feel like if he's going to one of those teams that you're working with the agent, you get his contract renegotiated. I think I agree with you on the $17.5 million, but like, again, in a trade scenario where, hey, we're working with you, I want to go to Cleveland, whatever, I want to go to Pittsburgh, okay, let's work, the Steelers, we're going to work on restructuring the contract. I mean, anyway, whatever, it doesn't matter, it's been done, he's been released. It's a huge story, and it's just yet another nail in the coffin of what's been an awful offseason for the Texans. You know, I did a video where I just said, on behalf of all the fans of the Washington professional football team, thank you, Houston, because normally these offseason disarray stories are usually about our team. And Houston has taken every other team in the NFL off the hook. The Jets fans are like, thank you, Houston. Yeah. At least we're not the Texans.
Yeah, the Texans have become kind of the franchise this offseason that really stands above the rest in terms of dysfunction. Very little of that to do with their new GM, Nick Caserio, and their new head coach, David Culley. They just walked into this pile of mud. But let's discuss the story that will define the offseason in so many ways, Stefania Bell, which is Deshaun Watson and his continued unhappiness. Now, whether J.J. Watt's release accelerates the timeline or reaffirms that Deshaun Watson could be on the outs in Houston, we do not know. But at this point, Stefania, we're basically playing like relationship psychologist here. The Texans keep saying they want to have, you know, that Deshaun is going to be back. As a matter of fact, they're not saying they want to have him back. They're saying he will be back. But at this point, I can't recall this much animosity between a franchise quarterback and a team in a long, long time.
It feels like a game of chicken at this point. Houston dug in and Deshaun expressing zero interest in participating. And, you know, he's got the ability to hold out. I think that Deshaun Watson leaves. I'm not really that ambivalent about it. I think it's just a matter of when they decide they need another quarterback to get ready for a season in Houston.
Yeah, I would agree there, by the way, Stefania. And I would say what this JJ Watt situation means specific to Deshaun Watson is like, I don't think it caught Deshaun Watson by surprise. I don't think that these things are necessarily interconnected. I think probably symbolically the release of J.J. Watt shows that this is an organization that is at least mindful of the need to potentially press reset. And the ultimate pressing of reset would be trading away Deshaun Watson for a package that would undoubtedly include, you got to figure, minimum of 2 first round draft picks, much more likely 3 first round draft picks, plus other assets that could be viewed as not quite first round picks, but valuable, whether it's proven young players or other high draft picks or ways to sweeten the pot for Houston. We are waiting for that story to drop. Tomorrow, Wednesday, represents 1 month until the NFL league year technically begins. I don't know if something will happen before then. I suspect it could happen at any point in between now and then. So all eyes remain on Houston right now as it pertains to Deshaun Watson, and also those who are impacted in the entire state of Texas right now by the very scary situation taking place in terms of the weather down there. We're thinking of you, all of our Texas listeners, whether Houston, Dallas, or other portions of the state. Let's move forward to the bulk of what today's show is.
Do you think there's any chance Deshaun Watson plays another snap for the Texans?
I don't think it's a 0% chance. I think it's a very, very unlikely chance. Like, I think it's 1 to 3%. But
I would agree.
Yeah, I think that, you know, because ultimately, if he says, Matthew, this is what it comes down to, is that if they say we're not trading you, then Deshaun Watson has to make a decision this offseason. A, fine, I'll play for the Texans again. Or B, I won't play for anybody, and I won't make any money on the football field as a result of that, which I wouldn't begrudge somebody if they decided that, hey, like, I know I don't want to be here, but I also don't want to walk away from $30 million of compensation.
Yeah, it will become an interesting game of chicken. It will be a real challenge.
Gee, I wonder who said that.
No, I'm agreeing it. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying, like, my question is that, anyway, it'll be a fascinating story to watch the offseason. We can move on.
Yeah, no, it will be really interesting to watch. We'll keep an eye on it again. Turn your Shefty notifications on. Keep your eyes on Twitter to see if something could eventually take place. In the meantime, let's get to what today will be really about, which is second-year players or guys who are going into their second year in the NFL. We're going to call it the sophomore jump or sophomore slump segment. We have a ton of names to get to. Some of them you're very familiar with. You may have had them on a championship roster this past season. Some of them are a bit more of a projection for next year. Some of them are so obvious, we don't need to spend a bunch of time on them. We'll begin, Matthew, with the highest scoring rookie. We'll look at these basically in terms of points per game scored last season. That's Justin Herbert, a guy who 6th overall in last year's draft and finished as the 9th best quarterback. I'm sorry, he is 9th in terms of Mike's 192 rankings for 2021. But he was unbelievable this past season at quarterback 7 on a points per game basis. I don't know how you could predict anything other than a sophomore jump for Justin Herbert.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is, you know, we don't know what this offense is going to look like, obviously, with Anthony Lynn and his staff moving on. So that's the one sort of question mark here. But Justin Herbert was everything you thought he could be and so much more. I thought he was, you know, he was amazing, right? Like, Thirsty Kyle notes he became the 4th active quarterback with 30 passing touchdowns, 5 rushing touchdowns in his resume when 25 or younger. The others, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Aaron Rodgers, right? So this is a guy that, you know, was the 2nd best quarterback in fantasy from weeks 4 to 11. So we've seen what the ceiling is. Is their defense improved so he's not as in many shootouts? Is there a learning curve with a new offense? Those are the only question marks about Justin Herbert, who clearly is going to be a NFL star and fantasy superstar for a long, long time to come. I can't imagine him getting out of the top 10 of any quarterbacks in any draft this year.
By the way, I can't imagine a learning curve being any sharper than it was when he had to play within 3 minutes of finding out he was going to play this year. You know, he didn't have much time. I was actually looking before this this recording, I was looking back at some of the scouting reports on Justin Herbert, and they make me laugh now because he overcame everything. You know, he had no touch on his deep ball, limited understanding of route trees. I mean, all the things that were like, well, it's going to take a while for him to adapt in the NFL. He adapted pretty darn fast this year. So I agree. I think the ceiling continues to be very high for Justin Herbert.
Yeah, Stefania, to your point, I love the story that Herbert has told in his postseason media blitz, which was when he entered the huddle in week 2. Obviously, that came just moments after he learned about Tyrod Taylor's punctured lung. Hunter Henry, the Charger star tight end, looked him in the eye and said, "What are you doing here?" So it was certainly an unforeseen circumstance for Justin Herbert and the entire Chargers offense. Let's move forward to James Robinson, RB5 this past game, 17 this past season in terms of points per game at 17.9. Remember, he scored at least 10 fantasy points in every game he played this year, missed a couple of games down the stretch because of an ankle injury. Matthew, everything went right for James Robinson when nothing went right for the Jaguars. Sophomore slump or sophomore jump?
I'm really going to say sophomore slump.
Really?
Listen, I think it's a slight one, right? But do I think he's better than the 5th best running back in fantasy next year? I don't. I mean, was he amazing? He was. Did he show this undrafted rookie that he belongs in the NFL? Of course he did. But I think the Jaguars are going to have more weapons coming into next year. Obviously, it's a big season of change, a big offseason of change for Jacksonville, starting with Urban Meyer being named to the head coach. So it's a brand new offensive system here. They're going to draft Trevor Lawrence. Their offense should be better. Part of what made James Robinson so great fantasy-wise is insane volume, right? I mean, he was their only guy. He's a guy that got 60 targets, right? He had over 15 carries, you know, in the majority of his games last year and over 10 games. Like, and just do they add more weapons in Jacksonville, given the fact that they have the number one overall draft pick and they have a ton of money under the cap? So do I think he's a talented player? I do. Do I think he's going to be an RB1 this year? I do. Do I think he improves on RB5 on a per-game basis? I don't, because I just don't think the volume is going to be there in the way that it was his rookie year.
It's probably one of those fine lines then between what is a slump and what is just other players catching up a little bit, right? Because if you still think he's going to be an RB1, and I'm not going to take you to task on that, I think he certainly has that potential
top 12.
And
when
ability.
I say RB1, I mean top 12. I think he's right. A top 12 running back.
Right, year. Yeah, somewhere between top 10 and 12. Like, I wouldn't consider, if he finishes next year as RB9, I would still consider that, I don't know about a jump, but it wouldn't be a slump either, if that makes sense, right? So I think that a lot of things did go right for James Robinson, and you're pointing out a lot of the factors that could mitigate those a bit next year. I'm also hopeful that just like a slightly more professional outfit next year on offense with Trevor Lawrence and whatever pieces, yeah, just leads to more opportunities for big plays and touchdowns. Let's move to another quarterback.
I think what you're saying, because we're both saying sort of the same thing. We believe in James Robinson, and maybe he takes a bit of a step back statistically, but he's still going to be a huge fantasy asset. I think we both agree there. I think the real issue here is with Daniel Dopp and his dumb sophomore jump or slump categories, that we're forced to pick players into one of those two categories, which is way too narrow when you're discussing the nuances of fantasy football player value. So I think if we can all just sort of blame at Daniel Dopp on Twitter loudly and angrily, that I think is the issue here. It's just this dumb premise we're in.
That's going to go over swimmingly with Daniel, who's actually not on the show today. He's taking some time off this week.
Of course.
So I'm sure he'll love to. Yeah, he'll love to run into.
I mean, all
the
more
Twitter
reason,
hate.
Right? Like, he phoned it in and then he took off.
Next player on our list, we have to start here with Stefania, because Joe Burrow, who finished as quarterback 17 last year on a per-game basis at 17.4 fantasy points, has an uphill battle this offseason, Stefania, specific to his knee rehab. A reminder, he basically shredded his knee against Washington last year. Do you expect him to be 100% ready to go by the time week one rolls around this season?
I was saying that you are going to either you are going to ask the question on behalf of the fans, or everybody's going to be asking that question as we get up to training camp. And the answer is always going to be the same for me, which is you're going to know more as it gets closer. I mean, right now, if you saw Joe Burrow's Instagram yesterday, he posted this great looking shot of him looking like he was scrambling, you know, casually with his Bose headphones around his neck, getting ready to throw the ball. And his caption was "coming soon, ... And everybody got excited, except me. I got a little nervous because Joe Burrow is just hitting the 3-month mark for a repair that he had done in December, ACL, MCL, just to recap, a little bit of PCL and meniscus. I mean, this is a multi-ligament knee. These are really tough injuries to recover from. And here's the great part, that he's feeling good. And reportedly doing excellent in his early recovery from this. And as of now, on a track towards the start of the season. But the biggest, most important things happen in the next few months. And if Joe Burrow does too much too early, which is sometimes the case when guys feel the outside pressure, feel like they need to get back, that actually puts him at a greater risk. So it's really important that he doesn't overdo it now, and that he holds himself back until he's really strong enough to actually start doing more aggressive sports-related activity. That's my comment on it, and then stay tuned.
All right, we'll stay tuned for September. My comment on Joe Burrow's Instagram is that if anybody goes and checks it out, I think Joe Burrow's mustache and beard is kind of the trajectory that mine has in a few months.
Wow.
It's better, but we're not James Harden or Daniel Dopp even, right? We don't have the ability to grow those full throttle beards. Matthew, sophomore jump or sophomore slump for Joe Burrow?
I'm going to say sophomore jump here, Stefania. I don't know if you caught that, but Field Yates just very, very slyly compared himself to Joe Burrow. Just put themselves in the same
sense. Joe Burrow's got nothing on Field Yates. You stop it.
I have an issue with that. Listen, the question is going to be about health, and you just heard Stefania talk. So we're going to, you know, we're going to obviously see, but assuming full health, and I understand that's a big assumption. Just, you know, can Joe Burrow play? I think he can. You know, here's a guy that was QB 17 on a per game basis here, but why did he have the success he had? Insane volume, right? I mean, the Bengals were bad on defense. They had to throw a lot. They're a pass-first offense under Zach Taylor. They're going to continue to be. I love T. Higgins. I love Tyler Boyd. I think they'll add some pieces. I'm not sure A.J. Green is back with a team, but I like the young core that Cincinnati has. And I think they're going to continue to have some challenges on defense this year. So as we sit here today, without knowing the full health of Joe Burrow, if he is healthy, I'm going to say Burrow.
Another player who we don't have to spend too much time talking about, but kind of reminds me of James Robinson, is Justin Jefferson. And the reason why I say he reminds me of James Robinson is that even if Justin Jefferson doesn't repeat his 1,400 receiving yards again this year, Matthew, I still think he's going to be viewed as a wide receiver that you can draft and expect to be playing every single week in your lineup.
He was nothing short of fantastic, Field, and shout out to you. In the preseason, you know, out of the draft, during the Fantasy Football Marathon, repeatedly over the preseason, you were like, in a crazy talented rookie draft, you said, I think Justin Jefferson has the best chance to be the most relevant fantasy rookie based on both his talent and his opportunity, both of which are in abundance, continuing in Minnesota. The opportunity is obvious. It's him and Adam Thielen. That's the show there. But in terms of the talent, coming out of LSU, we thought, oh, well, this guy's a slot receiver. He's going to be a good slot receiver. And very quickly developed in a much more significant route tree, became an awesome deep threat. Like, Justin Jefferson was all that and so much more. You know, look, most ever receiving yards by a rookie, over 11 yards per target. You know, that was the most of every player that had at least 90 targets, double-digit targets in each of the last three games, five of the last six. They leaned on him down the stretch as they were trying to turn their season around. Sky's the limit for Justin Jefferson.
It gets more interesting from here on out as some of the rookies from last year that we'll talk about either didn't quite reach their peak or they reached a really high level, but there probably is room for them to grow. Let's start in Indianapolis, where Jonathan Taylor came on down the stretch. He finished third in the NFL in rushing last season, but 651 of his yards, over half of his yardage, came in the final six games of the season. And it was a schedule stretch that was very favorable against the run for Indy. That being said, Matthew, despite the fact that maybe the stats are a bit inflated down the stretch, Jonathan Taylor, a sophomore slump candidate or more of a sophomore jump candidate?
I'm going to believe more of a sophomore jump candidate. Look, when you think about how he finished the season, right? Week 12 on, here's a guy that was averaging over 6.5 yards per carry. He had 7 touchdowns in those weeks, right? And in the playoff game, like, I think there were only 6 running back carries that weren't Jonathan Taylor. Like, it took a little bit of time for them to trust him, and there were times where you'd be like, wait a minute, what is Nyheim Hines doing? Like, wait, Jordan Wilkins? Really, Jordan Wilkins? But I think – and, you know, you sort of want to know what the Colts do at the quarterback position, because obviously that's their big question mark going into this offseason. But, look, there was a reason why people were so excited about Jonathan Taylor to the Colts in terms of that offensive line, that offensive philosophy. I believe he's going to be the lead back in a pretty good offense. We'll see if Marlon Mack returns, whether or not he comes back. Obviously got injured. I don't know that it really matters. Give me sophomore jump on Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think the jump may not necessarily be, again, an overall total points. He ended up as RB8 on a per-game basis last season, but it's just going to be much steadier, right? Because for the first half of the year, you put Jonathan Taylor in your lineup, hopefully, but you weren't necessarily always getting the returns. In the second half of the season, he delivered in a major way. It might be a much smoother sail this year. Brandon Ayuk for the 49ers was a guy that really just came on down the stretch for Stefania's team in the second half of the season. Stefania, I think is there any concern at all that his spike did correlate a bit with Deebo Samuel being off the field, where there were just so many more opportunities and so many more opportunities where they could use them in a way that was fantasy friendly?
It's true, but I think it's hard to assess the 49ers with a full complement of players on the field because they never had it. So I think we saw these weird games where different people had to be role players out of necessity. And I don't know that we really fully understand what the offense is going to look like. I actually think when he and Deebo are on the field together, presuming a healthy team going forward, George Kittle, et cetera, they are creating so much that defenses have to pay attention to that it actually works in each of their favor. The one thing about Brandon Ayuk, besides the fact that he has this crazy wingspan that allows him to catch crazy balls, is that he's great after the catch in typical 49ers fashion. He can operate like a running back. He's got a lot of evasiveness, can make people miss. So I think that can continue to help develop him as a wide receiver. He also missed time because of COVID. He had a high ankle sprain. You know, he wasn't free from injuries himself. So I think there's a lot of growth potential there.
Matthew, you think there's a chance for him to grow this upcoming year for this 49ers offense that we think will be quarterbacked by Jimmy Garoppolo, but we're not entirely sure?
I mean, that's the question, is right, because they've been rumored in a lot of different scenarios as well in terms of that involved Garoppolo and what does that offense look like? Because remember, it's not just Deebo Samuel, but George Kittle who was out. Like, their offense was such a question mark last year from week to week, where it was like, hey, whoa, it's Richie James this week. I mean, you know, so I think it's hard to really pinpoint until we know sort of full health and what the 49ers offense looks like to really get a sense of how we're going to project this. What we can say is, to Stefania's point, Brandon Ayuk can play in the NFL. Like, you can just see that from his talent. He's a very versatile player, which actually fits into what Kyle Shanahan likes to do there. And so, you know, he was absolutely fire down the stretch there, week 7 through 15, top 20 fantasy wide receiver, knocked me out of the playoffs in the War Room League in week 14 because he just had a monster game. So, look, he's a talented player who's only going to get better skill-wise, and the expectation is that as Kyle Shanahan sits there in the offseason and says, all right, what do I have to play with? How can I improve my offense? You have to assume that Brandon Ayuk is a big part of that.
All right, let's keep it rolling because we got a ton of names to get to. DeAndre Swift for the Lions sounds like he's set up to be a much more productive player this year. Matthew, are you buying into a possible jump for him in Detroit?
All in. DeAndre Swift is on the short list of potentially my ride or die candidates for next year. Look, the question on him wasn't talent. It was just usage. Matt Patricia and his running back by committee philosophy is gone. You now have Anthony Lynn, former NFL running back, former head coach of the Chargers, as their offense coordinator. He's traditionally been either a one-back guy or a two-back guy, but his running backs have always been productive. Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler. We know that the talent of Swift is off the charts. Started, you know, had the drop his first game of his rookie year, obviously in the end zone, lost the game for the Lions. Tough start, got banged up in the preseason. Second half of the year, you're like, okay. Anyway, I'm all in on DeAndre Swift this year. I think he's going to have a monster season next year.
We've got a lot of names to get through, so I'm going to jump around to a couple that I think are more compelling than others and go to Clyde Edwards-Helaire for the Chiefs, Matthew. And the reason why this is so fascinating is that in some places you have players that struggled because the circumstances around them weren't particularly ideal for fantasy production, whether it's because, like in Detroit, DeAndre Swift had competition and the offense wasn't great or whatever the circumstances may be. In Kansas City, Clyde Edwards-Helaire played for an offense that did not have other great running back options. They scored a ton, and yet he really didn't do nearly as much as many hoped for this year in fantasy. He was RB20 on a per-game basis before he got hurt. You think he's going to be a jump candidate next year, though? Because he was a player that some thought was worthy of a top-5 pick this past year.
Yeah, big disappointment. One of the biggest fantasy disappointments this year. given the landing spot and, you know, what he showed in college, I'm still willing to bet slightly more on a jump here. You know, I mean, I think part of the problem with Edwards-Helaire was the lack of scoring. And I think that was a little bit of a fluke, right? And so, you know, remember, this was an offseason where rookies had no training camp. They had a limited training camp and no preseason games.
I know. But Justin Herbert had 3 minutes of preparation, let the world on fire, right? Either matters or it doesn't, right?
No. I get it. And different players are built differently and situations are built differently. The Chargers were in a YOLO situation where Justin Herbert could put up huge numbers because what else do they have? Clyde Edwards-Helaire came into a team that had won a Super Bowl and obviously came one game within winning a second one where they didn't need to lean on him. Yeah,
Well, my concerns are, Jake, what position have we seen immediately translate to the NFL with ease?
Running back.
Year and year and year again, right? It's running back. And I'm not totally writing him off. I'm just saying that, like, some of the excuses that some of the justifications for what happened this past year haven't flown for me as much as they might have for other people, other players in this rookie class.
So again, I think it's part of the problem of the flawed premise of this show, right? So he was running back 20 last year on a per game basis. So you're saying sophomore jump or slump. Do I think he's over or where am I going to rank him? Do I think he's outside of the top 20 of running backs next year? I guess so, but I think I'd rather bank on starting running back for Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs that potentially still has talent. I think it's too soon to write off Clyde Edwards-Helaire as a bust. I understand he disappointed based on expectations. There's no doubt about that. And there's some stuff he needs to clean up in his game. There's no question. It wasn't all on the lack of preparation. I get it. But just, do I think he's a total bust? By the way, the other question for me is, and this will be a question, is what happens with Damian Williams? Does Damian Williams come back? Is he on the Chiefs this next year?
Yeah, I believe he will be back in the NFL. I do believe he'll be with the Chiefs as well. So we shall see. A lot to figure out with that Chiefs.
So in that case, then maybe if that is the case, as of the moment, that hasn't happened. But if that happens, then I would change my tune on CEH. But I guess I'm not ready to write him off just yet. But I will certainly be much lower on him coming into this year than I was last year, than I think all of us in the fantasy community were.
Yeah, I mean, I by the way, there's not like a process of a player opting back into the NFL. Like Damian Williams opted out for 1 year. He's under contract. So if you're like waiting for an announcement or something, and that's not going to happen. Like he's just back with the Chiefs on their roster in the same way that every other player under contract for 2021 is back on the roster. So unless he gets cut, Damian Williams will be with the Chiefs in 2021. Let's move forward here to a couple of other players. And Chase Claypool has sort of a Jonathan Taylor element to him last year because there was that stretch where he was on this torrid pace. It was sandwiched by a really quiet start and a disappointing finish, Matthew. Can he even things out this year with Juju Smith-Schuster set to become a free agent and not a certainty to return to Pittsburgh? Can Chase Claypool step into a role as the co-number one for that Pittsburgh offense with Deontay Johnson?
Yeah, I think he could. Again, to your point, especially if Juju moves on here. I loved what I saw out of Chase Claypool. Just look, was it inconsistent? Sure, but the Steelers' offense was inconsistent. And he showed big playability here. And the touchdowns obviously were inconsistent there. But when you sit there and you look through, I think Deontay Johnson's the one for them. But assuming Juju moves on, Deontay Johnson's the one, but am I worried about James Washington as the two versus Chase Claypool? I'm not. I mean, I like James Washington, but I think Chase Claypool has a chance to be special. So he was wide receiver 35 on a per-game basis. I'm going to say jump.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. I think he'll jump. I think things will even out. He's such a good touchdown maker as well. Kind of reminds me of Mike Evans in the red zone for the way that he finds the end zone so consistently. T. Higgins, you mentioned him earlier, Matthew. You just love the player. And I will tell you this. I'm working on a draft project right now that involves, of course, Trevor Lawrence, and going back and rewatching a bunch of old Clemson games. And they have always had great wide receivers, but T. Higgins was just different. You could be bullish based off what you saw last year in Cincinnati, what you saw at Clemson. The sky, I mean, with A.J. Green, likely gone as well. This could be my favorite breakout candidate in the entire NFL this season for fantasy.
1,000% agree. And I cannot tell you how insanely bitter I am that I don't have T. Higgins on more dynasty teams. Insanely bitter. Yes. I could not agree with you more. Love, 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 love T. Higgins. So, you know, have him on some teams, don't have him on nearly enough. I think he's going to take a massive leap. I'm with you.
Like, yeah, if you look back at last season, his snap percentage in the first, like, 3 to 4 games was not massive. And then he basically became a full-time player for the last, like, 12 games of the season, except for week 17. T. Higgins, the sky is the limit for that player. J.K. Dobbins, Matthew, was a guy that we wanted to make happen last year in fantasy. He finishes RB29 per game with 11.2 fantasy points. But Mark Ingram, we already know he's gone. He's already been waived by the Baltimore Ravens. Is this the year that J.K. Dobbins happens in the full form?
You know what? Somewhat. I mean, again, do I think he takes a jump? I do. Do I think he becomes the full thing? I'm concerned because I still think they want to be a committee, and whether it's Gus Edwards or somebody else they sign, like, I don't think they're going to give him true three down back usage. I wish they would. I think he's insanely talented. I love the talent of the player, and I think in the right system, he could be. And if Baltimore said, you're the guy, I'd be all in. My only concern here is role. It's not talent. Look, I do think he's going to be better than he was last year, which was running back 29 on a per-game basis. You know, the problem is that he had one catch in his final 5 regular season games. They just didn't use him as a three-down back the way we thought they could.
Yeah.
Right? No, you know, he just wasn't involved in the passing game. Right? Yeah. And so now you're splitting the running game with Gus Edwards and, honestly, obviously, Lamar Jackson, one of the greatest rushing quarterbacks in the NFL. So it's just you're competing for those goal line touches with a bunch of different guys.
You know, Stefania, in thinking back to last year, part of the reason why someone like Tua feels like a bit of a disappointment is because others at the position, specifically Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow, played really well. When I think about Jerry Jeudy, who was wide receiver 55 on a per-game basis last year with 9.8 fantasy points, wasn't a great season for him to start. But I also felt like there were some encouraging signs there. He needs to be more consistent with his hands. He had too many drops last season. But feels like Jerry Judy's a guy who, a year ago, if he had been drafted in a different offense, may have been close to the player that Justin Jefferson was for the Vikings this season.
I think so, too. I think he is a bit of a victim of the hype because Denver's plan all along was to really hit the ground running, literally, early, and then expand their receivers as the season progressed. And because of issues with Drew Lock, because of some of the challenges they have, remember when they had no quarterbacks playing, I mean, it was a bit of a messy season for them. And then, as you said, Jerry Jeudy had his own issues with drops. I mean, he had moments where he flashed some brilliance, and they do love him in Denver. They love his speed. They love the way he plays, but it just didn't seem that he could put it together consistently. I think inconsistency was the biggest problem for him. And I do think that he has a chance to improve that. You know, who knows? Cortland Sutton could be back. I think if you have another deep threat available, that also could help Jerry Jeudy. When the focus was all on him, I thought it was a little bit too much early on. So he needs more help at the quarterback position. He needs the benefit of having somebody else alongside of him who is another threat to create opportunities for him. But I think that he can be better than what he was this year, for sure.
Matthew, do you think that if he has Drew Lock as his quarterback again this upcoming year, that could be a hindrance to his fantasy value? Because Denver has been rumored to at least be in the quarterback market, whether it was sniffing around on Matthew Stafford and now at least maybe trying to make a play for someone like Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, look, Drew Lock had a tough year. There's no question about that. Things in Denver haven't gone how we hoped they were. Boy, you know, and the other thing about Jeudy is that, remember, we expect Cortland Sutton back healthy as well. So that's part of my concern here as well. But yeah, like if Drew Lock, even in year 3 of Drew Lock, does that hurt think hard to, I don't want to say slump because the dude was wide receiver 55 on a per game basis, right? And we know all about the talent, but it's going to be hard for me to suggest him as we stand here today, unless there's an improvement at the quarterback position. It's going to be hard for me to sit here and say in the preseason, boy, oh boy, you've got to target Jerry Jeudy early and often. You're not going to. Like, he's a guy that you take a flyer on late in your draft and you hope the talent wins out.
Yeah, but we just, you know, again, I agree with everything you're saying. I'm also mindful this year that, like, on occasion I'm going to have to zag when the rest of the fantasy community is zigging, only because there's so much uncertainty every single year, and that tends to be how you can find some of your best calls is when you look a little bit deeper and maybe tap a little bit less into some of the things that you've seen and a little bit more on things that you expect to see going forward. Let's wrap up with just a couple more players here. Stefania, I want to start with you on Cam Akers, a guy who came on really strong down the stretch, also was dealing with an ankle injury, that high ankle sprain that he bounced back from pretty remarkably for the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was not convinced that that was going to be the case. He was sort of forced into it, right? They needed him to be healthier, and he produced. I didn't think he'd be able to come back that quickly from it. I have said all along that the Rams medical staff is excellent, so I don't think they would have put him in out there in a situation if they were really concerned that he would suffer a serious setback. But I just didn't think he'd be able to be as productive as he was after that injury. That being said, I think he's really made a push to the Rams to be the guy for them. I mean, we saw it enough times this year. It took him a while, but in his last six games, he had at least 15 carries. I think that his role is going to be even bigger next year.
No doubt about that, Matthew. Sean McVay has had a hard time in recent years, I should say, locking in on just one guy as his go-to back, basically since the Todd Gurley apex. But it feels like Cam Akers showed at the end of this season that he has given Sean McVay reason to lock in on one guy as his go-to back.
I would agree with that. And as we talked about last week with the Stafford trade, we expect this offense to be more efficient, to be more consistent, to be in scoring position more often. So, yeah, Cam Akers, running back 47 on a per-game basis last year, is an obvious jump candidate.
There you have it. And one more, by the way, just to get us on the way out here, just to wrap it up. One more player. I'm just curious because I know, Matthew, you've tweeted about him and shared some thoughts with the pending Carson Wentz trade, which, again, could happen at any moment. Is Jalen Hurts, that you are essentially all in on Jalen Hurts as a top 10 quarterback next year, presuming that Carson Wentz is traded.
Yeah, this is a guy that in his four starts there, again, and you have to think about what the Eagles situation was. Obviously, the team's in disarray. There's, obviously Zach Ertz is less than 100% healthy. DeSean Jackson in and out of that lineup. I mean, they had so many injuries to different players, Jalen Reagor in and out as well. We didn't really get to him, but I like Jalen Reagor to take a step next year as well, being fully healthy. But even with all the disarray around him, Jalen Hurts was the ninth best quarterback in fantasy, both total points and points per game during his four starts. He averaged 23 fantasy points per game, threw for almost 230 yards a game. He had 68 rushing yards per game, right? And if I put this graphic out on Twitter, but if you look at the final four starts of Lamar Jackson's rookie year, where everyone was saying, like, oh, this guy can't throw. He's a one-trick pony. He's a running back pretending to be a quarterback, blah, 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 blah. You know, prior to then, of course, him winning the MVP in 2019. Like, the numbers that Lamar Jackson put up in his final four games compare very favorably to the numbers that Jalen Hurts put up in his four starts there. I don't know. Some guys just have it, and I thought there were enough flashes of it when Jalen Hurts was starting. And again, having a new offense that's come in and a new offense coordinator, new coach, new philosophy that will be built around trying to make Jalen Hurts a success, I'm in. I'm in on him as a top 10 fantasy quarterback. I think they'll have healthier skill position players. He's going to run a lot, and it's going to be a good fantasy offense.
You know what's crazy is the only thing that's giving me a little bit of pause on Jalen Hurts, it's just the idea that is he even the guaranteed starter for them next year? There's been not smoke per se, but there's been at least some speculation that the Eagles could still be in the quarterback market, even if they trade away Carson Wentz this offseason. Otherwise, I agree with you. And so I think there's like a 5% chance he's not their starter, but that 5% chance is the only thing holding me back from being a little bit more firm in my stance on Jalen Hurts as a likely top 10 quarterback going into next season. There are a lot more names we could have gotten to, and we will get to at some point, but a reminder that we are back here every single Tuesday during the offseason on the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast with a new episode wrapping up news or just finding topics that we can think of and coming up with them on our own to give you some content each and every week. For Matthew and Stefania, I am Field. We'll be back same time, same place next week.
Peace out.
You're in the home 6010.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.